This morning I turn to Mary Oliver to place my sermon in context as she wonders about life as a journey. One day, you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, "Mend my life," each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations through their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing that you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Any guesses to whose life Oliver is referring to that we were able to save? Yes, our own. Excellent. Sometimes I sit there and I go, I'm sure they know. That is the best news and blessing of all during this month of wondering about such things. Have you taken this topic of blessings beyond the meeting house this month? I wonder that as well. Have you thought about the blessings in your life? How you're affected and affect others in return? During a meeting last week, Carolyn mentioned in passing, you always got to be careful when you meet with me, just by the way, mentioned in passing that the word barakat in the language Urdu means blessings in a general sense. Being who I am, I love to know more. And being a scholar of sorts, I tend to dig a bit deeper. And I found that the word barakat is used in Arabic, Turkic, Persian languages, often as a salutation meaning blessings. However, I also found something else, that not only does it mean blessings, but also divinely inspired guidance. This got me thinking even more, specifically about inspiration as a blessing. Whether in a poem penned by Mary Oliver in the simplest of words or actions, such as barakat, we can find inspiration. Think about it. We have heard the word barakat for years and have associated it as a means to fundraise for the education of women and girls in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. But in a moment, exchanged with another, there is something far more important under the surface. Not that women and young girls aren't important. I believe that in this moment, there is what we see, and then what we do not see. And it is in the unnoticed or unseen where the sacred resides. Some of you may feel your heart start to race. Whoa, Reverend Maddie, Marjorie Jean Gertrude Hernandez, Guadalupe Maddie. Sacred is definitely a buzzword for the religious conservatives. Can you feel it? The angst start to surge. Sacred just sits there, sticks kind of, or at least for me. You get that full jerk, knee-jerk meaning, sacred. For me, the word conjures up images of the Sacred Heart Catholic School, located directly next door to the Sacred Heart Basilica in Syracuse, New York, the place where I was baptized and had my first Holy Communion. Every morning, outfitted in my maroon uniform jumper with SHS patched over my heart, I ascended the stairs of the bus that would drive me 30 minutes from my home to Sacred Heart School. My parents were good Catholics. They went all the way through Catholic school, and they felt that I should get my earliest education, beginning with kindergarten, from the nuns, just like they did. Being who I was, and still am, I started petitioning in the first grade to attend the local public elementary school, literally in walking distance from my home. By the beginning of the third grade, my parents, after I decided to take an inspired and unauthorized field trip out of school, and the Monsignor had branded me as uncontrollable, transferred me to Stonehenge Elementary School. Do not think for a moment that it is not lost on me that I left Sacred Heart to go to Stonehenge. But besides my early pagan penchant, here is my point. The one consistent piece of iconography in every classroom in Sacred Heart was a painting of the risen Jesus, with his flaming heart shining with divine light in the middle of his chest. And if you don't think this made an impression on a kindergartner, you would be wrong. Of course, his heart is pierced by a lance wound, encircled by a crown of thorns, sometimes with a cross, sometimes not, but always bleeding. The wounds and crown of thorns allude to the manner of Jesus' death, while the fire represents the transformative power of divine love, so explains the Catholic Church. A sacred heart. I want to think that my heart is sacred, and yet I don't know about you, but that pierced heart with thorns always makes me sweat. But let's stay in this moment of uneasiness and look for the unseen that possibly resides just a bit deeper. Let's think of the symbolism of a pure heart, say a heart of a child, untainted, unbroken by the world. And then let's think of the challenges and the hurt and the pain that one can suffer in this world and the symbology of that beaten and battered heart still glowing with love. It is actually an important realization that we can suffer and still remain open-hearted, have a heart that is glowing, in fact, in the face of the adversity that exists in this world. At first blush, the imagery of the bleeding, pierced heart makes me want to avert my eyes and run away. But if I go deeper and sit with my discomfort, the potential of the inherent and transformative symbolism has a chance to be revealed. And instead of a bloody, broken heart, a sacred heart is presented. And with it, a sense of, dare I say it, hope. Isn't this what we all want to believe in? Hope. And yet religions throughout history have misguided and manipulated their followers by it, and thus a sense of distrust about such symbolism and messages now exist. Religion, the one place that people felt that they could feel safe, became an opiate for the masses. That is just a bummer. I want something more. I want to be affected, inspired, compelled, because I want my life to mean something. I want to get to the end of this journey and feel that I did my best with no regrets. Hope. We look to religion for hope, and yet we do not trust. In this world of false facades, we have to cultivate hope. It is as if we grow it on a petri dish from one single-celled entity, keeping it alive, nurturing it, protecting it in this sterile environment. How do we do this, you may wonder? We, you and I, make the decision and commitment to stop long enough. We suspend judgment long enough in our mundane trudge to consider the random bits of life. Such as the word barakat, or the poem by Mary Oliver, and we study the deeper meaning. We marinate these bits with some open heart and a dash of open mind, and then add the most important ingredient of all, a willingness to go there. Those scary places that might cause us to hope and have the potential to change us. We go there. And if we do go there, maybe we will be faced with a voila, something significant, important, life-changing, or what I choose to call sacred. Maybe these sacred moments and experiences reflect a truth or a desire that unites us and compels us to fashion a beloved community. I, for one, am with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. I have a dream. We all have dreams, and they're beyond the mundane, aren't they? Maybe we share a hope or a dream in a meeting with another traveler, serendipitously, where a shared conversation goes to a whole new level. And I'm wondering if you've felt this too. Maybe you know that feeling, where it seems like you're about to levitate, or that you're vibrating at a higher frequency, all because of what you're sharing with someone else. These interactions can happen anywhere with anyone, but they provide us with an opportunity to realize that what we thought about the world and our place in it might go beyond what we see. In an instant, we are exposed to universal brilliance. For a moment, then, and then we move on. Or maybe, just maybe, we linger in that moment beyond the exchange, and we wonder, and we dig a little deeper, and we allow our beliefs and our understanding of self to be affected and possibly changed. This is a sacred moment. Something has happened, and we sit there and we realize, we maybe take a second to acknowledge it and think, whoa, what is this? I love those moments. I just don't have enough of them. Do you? This month, we've been thinking about blessings, how we are blessed in comparison to others, how we can share our blessings, and to be mindful of the implications of our blessings. Why mindful? Because these lives of ours fly by in an instant. And if we are mindful, we may just have an opportunity to be present to the marrow of life. Not lost somewhere along the road, but right there. If we are present, we can make a difference and live a genuine life filled with integrity. I think of the integrity in life when I think of Ralph Waldo Emerson, once a Unitarian minister, who explained that in order to be a good minister, it was necessary to leave the ministry. The profession is antiquated. In an altered age, we worship in the dead forms of our forefathers. This mode of commemorating Christ is not suitable to me. That is a reason enough why I should abandon it. He was speaking specifically about the traditional practice of serving communion, transubstantiation, the belief that one can change bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ. And by taking this metaphorical body and blood into oneself, an individual could be more Christ-like, also known in my book as enlightened. Instead of doing and teaching what was expected, Emerson chose a different path. He chose to be mindful and to respond differently. Emerson decided to leave the ministry, and yet he traveled around speaking about his transcendentalist thoughts and explained that anyone at any place and time can have direct and immediate access to the central truths and experience of life itself. Let us be silent, and we may hear the whisper of the gods. There is guidance for each of us, and by lowly listening, we shall hear the right word. Emerson took the sacredness out of the Eucharist and offered the potential for enlightenment and direct divine experience back to humankind. A sacred moment, a realization, a change of heart. In our contemporary society, we are not encouraged, given, or take the time that is required to live beyond the pale, beyond our known reality. I, for one, want to embark upon a journey of discovery. I want to live a life filled with adventure, spiritual and secular, and in many ways, that is hard to find in the safety of the known. I want to embark on a hero's journey, as Joseph Campbell described. Here's the good news of Unitarian Universalism. Emerson, if he were in the ministry today, would not have to leave his community to journey or profess his beliefs about transcendentalism. He would have been able to preach his truth from any UU pulpit. Whether he'd listen or not would be another situation altogether. But my truth for you that we do not have to leave one another to embrace the sacred is our birthright. It is not beyond the rational. It is beyond definition. Like looking into the bright, strong eyes of a newborn, unknowing and vulnerable, and yet held in care, nurtured, encouraged to grow up to a life of becoming. Our blessing in this religion of questioners resides in our fourth Unitarian Universalist principle, barely ever referred to and not well tested, that we are affirmed to engage in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Wherever that truth may reside, be not afraid to seek it. Dearest friends, what could our lives become if we dared to look into the sacred places, those sacred places that call to us? Emerson's whispers can still be heard. Solitude, stillness, reflection, judgment, and understanding all to come together to guide us. It seems that this week I had multiple interactions that brought me a level of insight. Another one I didn't realize at the time, but I have now realized it was a sacred moment. I was asked how I was able to walk away from a very lucrative career in the high-tech industry to go into ministry of all things. My answer then was that I faced into my fear of change, and my desire to make a difference in the world outweighed my desire to design software. Fairly benign response. And that was a good answer for me last week, but since then I've thought about it some more. I thought about the fear, the joy, and the sacred presence that I felt in a cave in England, and I knew that my life had changed. Right then, I knew it. I didn't change it. I didn't go in there expecting to change it. I was changed by a sacred moment. And after my experience, I wanted more. And I expected more from myself. And I realized that the only thing that could hold me back from living a blessed life was fear. And in most cases, it was self-constructed fear that held me in untenable, unfulfilling circumstances. I could have ignored the experience and I could have denied it all. I could have walked out of that cave and said, whoa, that was a trip, and then come back to my life. But I made a choice. And since then, I continue to choose to live mindfully and genuinely. And I know that challenge and change are a blessing because they affect us and help us to evolve. Evolution is a natural process, and yet it is daunting because one must rethink their identity. And if you don't think that's hard, it is. But what if we altered our perspective about change and instead saw the process as a sacred enterprise? Give me journey. Give me change. Give me the opportunity to grow and be mindful. That is my mantra, as scary as it seems. How do we live a blessed and sacred life? Begin by putting how on the back burner, and instead begin by asking, why? Why we, you and I, might want to live differently or deeper into this life? For me, I wanted to, since I was very young, become enlightened. It was my goal. No small task to let go of and awaken as I have grown. I want to be affected, inspired, and compelled because ultimately I want my life to mean something. Really, I do. The why is far more important of a question to ask ourselves than the how. Why? And what? And when? All those high, how, what, when questions, they tend to follow the why. My gift to you this morning is really fairly straightforward. I'm here to remind you lovingly not to forget to realize all of your blessings, to remind you to seek the sacred, unseen treasure within the mundane. Understand your why and listen for that small, still voice that exists right in that sacred heart of yours. And as Mary Oliver reminds us all so aptly, there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Where should we journey? Seek the sacred moments of doing and undoing and redoing. That is where you shall find me. For this we pray. Blessed be. Amen.